This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Berkeley Life Nitric Oxide Support Supplements. Nitric oxide is a vital signaling molecule in cardiovascular health. We all make nitric oxide in our bodies, but as we age, it starts to diminish naturally. Being proactive in maintaining nitric oxide levels is vital for healthful aging because an underperforming cardiovascular system will limit the effectiveness of any other supplementation in your regimen. Just two capsules of Berkeley Life daily provides the dietary nitrate equivalent of 7 ounces of beets and can support energy levels, maintain healthy blood pressure levels, and improve general circulation. It's the professional-grade nitric oxide supplement that I recommend and prescribe for my patients. This is only available from healthcare providers. To get your Berkeley Life professional supplements, just go to drhoffman.com/Berkeley Life. That's drhoffman.com/Berkeley Life. You can also get Berkeley Life's patented nitric oxide test strips to conveniently test your own nitric oxide levels safely and easily at home. That's drhoffman.com/Berkeley Life for Berkeley Life nitric oxide supplements. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and of course, coronavirus being on our minds, we're going to take a slightly different tack. We're not going to talk about some of the vitamin supplements, nutritional strategies that we've been talking about so much here on Intelligent Medicine. We're not going to talk about high-tech medical breakthroughs. We're going to talk about the psychological ramifications of the COVID-19 pandemic. It's a very strange time because we've sort of reached the apogee of the epidemic, and a lot of places are contemplating releasing us from bondage. And this is actually the time where psychological stress really peaks, because, you know, when it's simple and it's scary and, you know, it's kind of shelter in place, okay, you know, that's pretty easy directive to follow. But here we're faced with options and alternatives and controversies. Should we be getting out there? Should we be concerned that the authorities are being too lax in allowing us to go back outside? Of course, that's not even in question where I'm broadcasting from here in New York, but other parts of the country are waking up and people are reemerging. We're going to talk to one of my favorite go-to people on the psychological front. He's Dr. Christian Conti. He's one of the country's most accomplished mental health specialists. And his focus is on the field of anger and emotional management. He has worked with very, very challenging circumstances in prisons and with inmates. He's got tremendous qualifications and also, you know, a real calling in dealing with very, very troubling emotional situations. He's a certified domestic violence counselor as well, and a certified level 5 anger management specialist. I guess it's kind of like being a black belt in anger management. That's sort of what it is. But so without further ado, Dr. Conti, it's a pleasure having you back on Intelligent Medicine.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate being back on.
It is my great pleasure. And we had a great conversation last time, and little did we envision, you know, a few months back, you know, we talked about this in general, you know, a lot of people facing emotional crises and all kinds of challenges, you know, just add literally thousands and thousands and thousands of tons of stress with this current pandemic. And we've got really a recipe for some very, very challenging statistics when it comes to mental health, right?
Oh, my goodness. So I feel like I actually use this phrase. I'll put out a new I do a free YouTube channel for people. I put out a new I'm going to put out a new video later today. But I use this phrase. It's a pressure cooker. It's like everything is intensified. And that's what happens when we're kind of boxed in, whether we're boxed in psychologically or physically as we are now. It becomes a pressure cooker. So you're right. Like we kind of have everything amplified to the nth degree right now.
And, you know, I thought about this, you know, just before we set up this interview, is that You actually specialize in working with inmates. You've been a consultant to many prison systems, and you've gone into lockdown and even worked with some of the most serious offenders, you know, people with life sentences, people on death row. But in effect, we're all inmates now. So are there any insights that we can gain from the experience of people who are incarcerated that may apply to us in our daily lives? I mean, what kinds of problems are amplified when you got to stare at the four walls and you can't go out?
Oh, see, to me, that's a phenomenal. That's the question that we need to be asking, because within, I believe enlightenment comes from anyone, anywhere, at any time. And when we look into the confines of what maximum security prisons are, where I work, what I do, it's no joke. I mean, I'm literally talking to people who committed the most horrific crimes in the world. And what I've seen, and what I'm seeing in the prison system, and what I think we can get the lesson from is this. When it comes down to it, if we can't escape through any kind of physical outlet, then what we're left with is our own minds. And now more than ever, I think it's important for us to understand our minds. For instance, I'm watching people who fall victim to something I call, what's called hindsight. I didn't name this. It's called hindsight bias. Mm-hmm. In other words, once something already happens, we go, oh yeah, I already knew that. But we didn't actually know it ahead of time. And what happens is people are watching leaders on local, state, national levels. And when they make a decision, if you're steeped in fear, all of a sudden this becomes amplified. Well, I wouldn't have done it this way. I would have done it that way. And then people actually believe that fantasy and then run with it even farther, making themselves angry. And that's the key word, making themselves angry. It's not the outside world. It's what we're doing to ourselves.
So this comes from an almost enforced diet of media exposure, because, you know, we have our TVs on, you know, we're at home, and, you know, whether we're doing chores or cleaning up, you know, the TVs are on incessantly, and we're getting, you know, depending on which station we tune into, one view or another of the world, but we're also getting public officials who are coming on making pronouncements, and we hang on to their every word because we hope that they're going to give us an idea of, you know, is everything all right? Or are we headed towards doom? You know, we just had the head of the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, saying, well, you think you're okay now, but just wait, because in the fall, it might be much worse even than now. I mean, that's a message that can really go viral in a bad way.
Oh my goodness, does it ever. I'm so grateful you brought that up, because I think here's what happens. Like, if you're in a position where you're in the public eye, the last thing you want to do is come out and say everything's going to be fine, because life is life and everything isn't.
It could come back and bite you later, you know, in the election cycle.
Exactly. But so then the opposite occurs where, so now I don't think people are malicious. Look, I don't think people in the media are malicious. I don't think they're psychopaths intending to cause harm. But the reality is that is what's happening. People are causing significant alarm. I saw an article the other day where it said something to the effect of the worst case of disaster ever. And then when you read the article, it was two people who had passed away, which every death is a tragedy. Mm-hmm. Trust me, no man is an island. But when we're talking about national news and 350 million people, when two people pass away, both older, once you read the article, both susceptible to all this stuff, who knows what other health condition arise. For that national article to say worst disaster ever within this town, well, that's really playing to people's fears.
It's clickbait. And of course, you know, I think the media understands this, you know, from Facebook to Twitter to, you know, people in advertising, that the way to engage people is not through their intellect, through their forebrain, it's through their limbic system, their primitive fears, you know, the amygdala, which is the fear center of the brain. That's how you get sticky eyeballs to look at your copy and, you know, pay attention. So it's natural that stuff sorts to the top. How do you stay informed? This is a matter of balance. You need to stay informed, but on the other hand, How do you achieve balance under these circumstances? Are there some guidelines for you with, you know, people you're talking to and, you know, your YouTube audience and your clients?
Yes. You know, it's the same stuff. I was a tenured professor. I left the world of academia maybe 9 years ago, but I was in it long enough to be a tenured professor, and I would teach master's and doctoral students. And basically what I would tell them is when you're going through these articles, even the most professionally written articles, peer-reviewed journal articles, pay attention to what people are absolutely trying to communicate. Because if you, if you even break down what their hypothesis was and you understand what their intention is, and you know this too, as a medical professional, people in this world will sometimes say, let me skew the data to fit what my hypothesis mm-hmm, was. Mm-hmm. And that's important information for the consumer to know that, who is giving me this information? What is this study? Because we have this almost like we deify the word study. Oh, it's a study. But we don't really actually check the modality with which they performed that study.
And frankly, you know, I got to say, you know, I'm an educated medical professional, but I barely am equipped with the tools to discern whether some of these studies are legitimate or not. It's very challenging. And, you know, we sometimes turn to experts who analyze studies to tell us about the flaws of these studies. But it's actually, you know, I use that phrase, it's above my pay grade. You have to be practically a statistician sometimes to see and spot the underlying flaws, the assumptions that are erroneous in so-called studies and research projects.
Yeah. And I think what I just genuinely, you know, I meet so many people all the time. And one of the things I genuinely loved about the interaction I had with you last time is we just had such a great discussion. So if we can just start from the beginning for all your listeners, I want to break this down so simply, but when you make a hypothesis, normally you might say it's directional, like I'm going to find this. Mm-hmm. And the problem with that was people were so honing in on their confirmation biases, which is, this is what I'm going to find when I study, that the field shifted to saying, let's accept the null, which sounds like a fancy term to somebody who's not involved in this stuff. But all that means is when we go to make a study, we say, I don't know what in the heck's going to happen. There's going to be no difference among these groups.
This is actually a very important point that you're bringing up, is that the scientific method is grounded in the notion of the null hypothesis. Say you believe, let's take something really simple, that the Earth is round. You actually proceed from the hypothesis that the Earth is not round or spherical. So what you want to actually do is you want to disprove the null hypothesis. So in science, you really need to approach every concept, even a concept that might seem intuitively correct to you, that you really strongly believe in, with a great deal of skepticism. And then only after rigorous, rigorous study should you be willing to give up your skepticism and then get to the confirmation of your hypothesis. But unfortunately, a lot of research, especially the way it's reported in journalism, it reinforces confirmation bias.
Yes, that's it. So confirmation bias, for any listeners who aren't familiar with that term, it simply means if I look for something, I'm going to find it. If I think someone's dumb, it doesn't matter if they're talking about advanced physics. If they stutter in one moment, I go, see, that's exactly what I thought. And so confirmation bias is we look for what we want to see. And it's really naive to believe that researchers don't fall victim to their own even emotional confirmation bias, let alone the fact that they want to prove or disprove whatever they're setting out to prove or disprove. And, you know, when we guide people, when I was a professor, I would guide doctoral students and I would say, look, when you become emotional and you start telling me what you are certain you're going to find, you've now left the realm of a scientific method and now you're into your emotions. Like, I don't care what your study finds. I care that you try to be as neutral as possible and report those findings in a scientific way. But that's not reality, especially when you get in the world of, oh my goodness, anything outside of something that's peer reviewed. Now we're just talking about mostly people report through their own opinions. And I believe it's important to teach people that so they understand what they're actually reading.
So where do we see this applicable to COVID-19? Where are we seeing all kinds of confirmation bias distorting what are, you know, the seemingly the facts, but, you know, the facts are all over the place. On the one hand, it's nothing. It's exaggerated. This is, you know, just a, like a bad form of the flu. It barely kills as many people as the flu does every year. And that's on one side. And the other side is this is extremely devastating. It may kill hundreds of thousands, millions of people. It's crazy to even contemplate going to get a haircut or, you know, going to massage, you know, get a massage or resuming our normal activities.
So the main thing I teach people to do to decipher, to begin to decipher what they're taking in is this. Ask yourself what you already believe. So if you already believe, let's say your leadership, in fact, let's just make it personal. So take out the emotion on your local level. So forget the national stage, on your local level. If you believe that your leadership is intelligent and doing the right thing, your confirmation bias will support that. You'll say, see, they're doing the right thing. No matter what they do, proved or disproved. Now, if you dislike that leadership, and it could be local, you know, regional, national, whatever it is, if you dislike that leadership, when they make a decision you don't agree with, boom, your confirmation bias kicks in.
I'm very susceptible to that because, of course, I live in New York City, and you know who we have as a mayor.
Right.
So it's easy for me to fall into that. As soon as I see him on the screen, what in the heck is he saying now? You know, I'm very susceptible to that.
But the
and he may be right, but I just, you know, I just.
Yes, but here's where you're so impactful and where you lead people in such a beautiful way. For the fact for someone to be as intelligent and well-versed in the world of science as you are and to be open, like I'm open about that too. I'm like, of course I have bias. Of course there are things I'm drawn to more than the other. The only difference is I constantly question my own ego. Right. I constantly question my own perspective. Yeah. And honestly, even from that comment, it demonstrates you do too. So
I think that is a mark of a discerning intelligence is for everyone.
Yeah.
And this is not, you know, to assume the mantle of authority, but you know, I'm constantly questioning my beliefs. And I really think that that's the mark of a good researcher, scientist, communicator, even politician.
It is. So as soon as I see people attempting to perform any kind of scientific studies who are emotional, I say, I appreciate you. I appreciate your intentions, but you're not ready. You're not ready until you can set aside that emotion. If you want to give a study and say, listen, this is emotional, I believe this is great. But if you're going to actually purport to be scientific, the emotions can't be there and it can't be suppressed. They can't be like, well, I'm not a, yes, if you are, you are. Here's the challenge for most people. Authenticity via our mirror neurons. We have neurons in our brains that say, whatever you're doing, I'm mirroring in my own brain. I'm picking up on it. It's the roots of vicarious learning and empathy. And so when we watch people, our mirror neurons fire. And if we're not aware of this, then we are essentially pawns or what I would call on the tougher end, puppets to whatever people are telling us.
Yeah, we become very robotic in our responses. Mm-hmm. Okay, folks, at this point, let's pause and allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share this vital message with you. This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman with one of my personal solutions to better cardiovascular health, Berkeley Life Nitric Oxide Support Supplements. Just 2 capsules of Berkeley Life daily provide the dietary nitrate equivalent of 7 ounces of beets and can support cardiovascular health, maintain healthy blood pressure levels, and improve overall circulation. For more information and to purchase, just go to drhoffman.com/berkeleylife. drhoffman.com/berkeleylife. Berkeley Life Nitric Oxide Support Supplements. This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Protocol for Life Balance product line, available at my online dispensary. Protocol for Life Balance offers a wide range of professional-grade products using ingredients backed by strong scientific research. Among them, several stand out, which help support positive mood and relaxation. GABA, 5-HTP, SAMe, L-tryptophan, and Mucuna extract. With current economic and living conditions causing widespread sadness and tension, these neurotransmitters and their precursors can help support positive mood and relaxation. That's according to numerous clinical studies. Their ingredients are backed by solid scientific data. They're only available from healthcare practitioners, but they're available to you at drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance. That's drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make intelligent medicine a continuing free resource to you, even amidst the current coronavirus pandemic, especially when you need intelligent medicine information. And now back to our guest, Dr. Christian Conti. I wanted to open up another aspect of the discussion, which is the anger element to this. And there is a lot of anger and frustration. And you know, just to put it in a real context, you know, I was in the store the other day, and there have been very confusing rules here in New York about social distancing and wearing masks. And all of a sudden in the store that I frequent, it's a sort of a medium-sized store. It's not one of the big chains, but, you know, they still have the food and, you know, they're right around the block from me. I realized that they now require masks. So fortunately I had a mask. I put on the mask. I went shopping. And then as I was in the checkout line, I saw this really crazy encounter. There was a man, and this man must have been in his 70s, and he was at the entrance. And he was yelling at the top of his lungs, and he was screaming profanities at the manager of the store because he didn't have a mask on, and he wanted to get into the store. And all of a sudden, they were barring his ingress to the store so they could get his measly supplies. And there were four cops standing there, and the cops were just nonplussed. You know, they just stood there. They had their masks on, and they kind of just shrugged. You know, they didn't know what to do about this guy. And ultimately, the guy was turned away. But right. I thought, oh, my goodness, this guy is at risk. He's an older guy. I mean, he could have given himself a heart attack or stroke. His face was florid. His blood pressure was probably through the roof. He was so angry and incensed that he was being thwarted. And I thought, man, this guy could actually become a casualty, not of the virus, but of his own emotions.
That's huge. And you're absolutely right. Look, I think there's a difference between what I call the cartoon world, which is our world of shoulds. This should happen. He should be wearing a mask. He shouldn't be wearing whatever your side is, but it's your shoulds. And so that's the cartoon world. And then there's the real world, how the world actually is. Mm-hmm. So if the person wasn't wearing a mask, that person wasn't wearing a mask. And as long as we align our expectations with our cartoon world, they should be doing this. We're going to be really angry. But one of the most freeing things we can learn is it's not the outside world letting us down. It's our own expectations. So if we can learn to align our expectations with the reality, now we're more prepared for it. So he walks in there. So if I was working with him individually, I might say, so you walk in there, you might expect human nature. You're going to find some people with a mask on, some people without it. So now I would like you to prepare how you encounter that situation. If it irks you, then make sure you have your mask on. If it doesn't bother you, be prepared for that, whatever it is, but be prepared to handle the reality of what you're encountering.
Right. And, you know, even if there is a controversial element to wearing masks, but on the other hand, you know, the pragmatic situation called for, all right, you know, it's just like, I got to be in costume here. I'm going to put on a mask for, you know, for whatever symbolic or real value it offers. And I'm going to get with the program. This guy, you know, simply was rejecting the reality that was impinging around him. But, you know, we're probably seeing that, you know, a lot of people acting out at home, you know, they're getting irritable in ways that are unexpected. They're transferring the anxiety they have about their futures and their jobs and, you know, getting killed by the virus to ordinary everyday situations at home. Are you seeing that happening?
Yes. So there's a beautiful philosophy. It's a psychological approach called cognitive behavioral therapy. I know you know this, but I'm going to spell this out for your listeners. So any listeners who aren't familiar with this, here's what it means. Cognitive behavioral therapy sounds fancy. Cognitions are your thoughts, behaviors are your actions. Cognitive behavioral therapy essentially says that your mind controls how you feel. So if you tell yourself something's awful and terrible, you're going to feel terribly. I love cognitive behavioral therapy. I think it's helpful. It makes sense. But the problem is it's not complete. Although it's wonderful, what I have found and what I teach in something, what I invented called yield theory, is that yes, that's cool. But also in addition to that, the reality is that our mind wants to match our body. So if I feel agitated, if I feel irritable, and then I'm most likely going to create a story to match that.
Yep.
And now we take this to our every single person who's listening at home right now. If you are agitated and irritable, your mind's going to create a story to match, which might mean, oh, my wife just did this. My husband did this. He's the reason. She's the reason why I feel the way I do. My children are the way I. Mm-hmm. No, it's not. Your body feels agitated, irritable. You might feel fear, and your mind is creating a story. So what if you could pay attention to that story so you don't amplify that physiological response?
In effect, what you're saying, and this is an important tenet of CBT and also, you know, some of the major, especially Eastern religions of the world, is that your thoughts are not real, that your thoughts are sort of emanations of the seat of your consciousness, which may be affected by perturbations like, you know, I'm not feeling well today. I have inflammation in my body. I'm hungry. I'm tired. I'm, you know, been sedentary too long. I need some fresh air. These are some of the things that may shape your thoughts, which seem so real and so imminent and so compelling.
That's it. Like, that's the nail on the head. That's it. So we feel awful, and so we start to create a story to match. It must be someone else. It must be the leadership. It must be these decisions. How about if you sat with it? And watch this, because this is powerful. I should probably more accurately say listen to this, because people aren't watching it. So listen to this. Here's the gem within all of this. Instead of saying it must be someone else, we go, okay, I'm uncomfortable. I don't like how I feel, but it's not the end of the world. I can handle it. And the more we say to ourselves, it's not the end of the world. I can handle it. The less cortisol and adrenaline that gets flowing through our body. And now we're able to more rationally approach the situation.
Yeah, we're a biochemical soup, and you know, body does not stop at your neck. You know, your brain partakes of what's happening in the rest of you.
Listen, I'm going to quote you on that probably from here forward. I love it. Your body does not stop at your neck. That's great, because that's very – it's one of those things that's so simple, but it's actually so powerful, because I think so many people believe, well, if it's body, it's separate. If it's mind, it's separate. No, it's all connected.
Yep. Indeed. All right. There's a good point which to pause, because we got a lot more to talk about as we discuss strategies for coping with some of the stress and anxiety and depression that's engendered by our current circumstances, the pandemic and the fear of the contagion, but also the fear of real economic hardship that a lot of Americans are facing. Our guest is Dr. Christian Conti. He's one of the country's most accomplished mental health specialists, also focuses on anger management, works with challenging situations in prisons and among inmates. He is a level five anger management certificate. I don't even have a level one half.
I don't have a level point. Listen, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm actually really proud of that. But the last week I really earned that certification. So there are only three other people on the planet that have that. It was kind of an honor.
You, the Dalai Lama, and is it Pope? You know. The
Pope? But I kind of really appreciate it, because it was kind of an honor that the International Anger Management Association bestowed on me. So I appreciate that. The other three are 30 years older than I am. So again, that made a lot. But last week, I got to tell you, because this is kind of where the rubber hits the road. Last week, I was in a maximum security prison. I have inmates who are on what's called what would be normally called just a lockdown, but in this sense, what we're trying to say to our 25 state prisons in Pennsylvania is we're not putting you on a lockdown, we're putting you on a quarantine lockdown, which is totally different than anything we've ever encountered. Whoa. But to every inmate, oh my goodness, I'm basically locked down for 23 hours a day. And so to them, this is heightened. So imagine this. I walk into a block where these guys are locked down 23 hours a day. Again, for their own good, I really do believe wholeheartedly in our Secretary of Corrections and why he's doing what he's doing. I believe he's doing the right thing.
Right.
Exactly. But I also felt that energy. So I allowed some of the inmates who wanted to speak to me to come out. And I said, I'm going to give you this format. Go ahead and come out. So I'm on one particular block. We got about 125 inmates in that block. About 10 of them came out with heat, anger, and they are screaming at me. I mean, listen, I'm telling you, they were telling me things like their belief was, because they see me on television with the Secretary of Corrections, or they see me that I have access to the governor. So their belief was, I can just go say something and I'm going to change everything.
Right.
And so they came at me with this incredible anger. And here I am for about an hour and 20 minutes on this floor with 10 inmates basically screaming at me, coming up about to the point where one inmate came out and said, man, Doc, I'm so sorry. I bet you never experienced this before. And I said, listen, I appreciate you. I appreciate you a ton, but I didn't get to be a level 5 anger management specialist by sitting at home filling out some forms. Like, I'm in it and I'm here and I'll take their energy. If that helps our corrections officers be safer on that unit, if those inmates can get their anger out on me and I can help keep our corrections officers safer, I'm cool. I can handle it. I don't take it personally. I see that all that anger was about what they were experiencing inside, and it was intense. I'm not gonna lie, there was a moment where I had to tell one inmate, my man, I appreciate you, you cannot sit behind me, like, we're gonna sit in front of me, because it's not my first day in the prison. You're not gonna sit behind me where you can come up and slice my neck. It's not gonna happen.
You might have a homemade garret. Well, suffice it to say, you don't get a level 5 anger management certification via correspondence course, right?
Yeah, you're not going to get an internet connection for that. You're not going to sign up for that online. But I really do appreciate that honor, but I also know that it takes work and effort and 20,000 plus hours of clinical experience and working with violent offenders and hearing the stuff I hear. I appreciate it, but it's not about me. It's about the reality that I see, that when people are angry, even if they target you specifically, it's not about you. It's about themselves. Because people who are at peace will not put that stuff on you. It's only people who are struggling.
Well, and in that situation, though, you have to really make yourself very, very, very small. Your ego has to virtually vanish to be able to stand up to that level of abuse.
Listen, that's it. Listen, can I please, I want to talk about that for a moment, because what you just said, it got me, I know this.
Can we hold that thought? Because this is a great point at which to pause. What we're going to do is we divide the podcast into two parts. You know, let's talk about strategies for dealing with anger in part two. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Dr. Christian Conde is my guest. And this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. We'll be right back.